and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio, live on a Thursday with Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson from Prout Financial Design. Welcome back, all. Good morning, Dennis.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On March 11th, 2021.
Wow.
On the cusp of spring. Cusp of spring. We'd love it. Yesterday? Was it yesterday? No, this morning. Sorry, I lose track sometimes, you know.
It all
Where are we now?
Together.
Red-winged blackbirds singing very loudly in the marsh.
Nice.
Next to our house.
Nice.
Really, really cool. And, of course, joining us this morning is Heidi Thompson.
Good morning.
Our ICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you.
Great to have
it's
you here
with
us. Good
to be here.
We've got a lot of material to discuss today. I'm going to be talking about the top 10 IRA rollover mistakes, and I think it's rather a negative name, but I think of it in terms of transitions from work, transitions within families of retirement accounts, and the things to avoid, but also the possible opportunities you might have in regards to those accounts that you might not previously have known, given that you weren't listening. I'm sorry, honey. I didn't hear a word you said. Well, if that's the case, by the way, we have on our website the podcast from these radio shows. And those are posted usually 2 to 3 weeks after the fact. So that is proutfinancialdesign.com. And certainly appreciate the numbers who've been listening to that as well.
May I say one thing, Mr. Prout, before...
You certainly may.
March 20th, 2020, almost a year ago, the Dow Jones was at, just had it here, 18,591. 18,000. Today, at this current time, from 18,5, it's at 32,509.
Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing. It's just something to think about.
Thank you for that observation there, Ron.
Crazy.
It's amazing, isn't it? I was actually noticing before I came onto the show as well. It shows the significant amount of government stimulus that's been put into this economy, as you were talking earlier. $6 trillion on the COVID-19 stimulus package okayed by Congress, which is inclusive of the $1.9 trillion Biden bill. By the way, will cost taxpayers the equivalent of $17,000 each. Or $69,000 per family.
Mm.
The new package set for House approval on Wednesday, which has happened, sets aside billions of dollars for non-COVID relief and adds to the nearly $1 trillion in unspent money approved in earlier COVID bills. $1 trillion. $1,000 billion. We lose track, I think, and perspective.
The digital printing machines are busy.
Busy. And, yes, will cause other things to happen as well in regards to our dollar as well as our ability to pay it back. All right, top 10 rollover mistakes. Number one, IRA to IRA rollovers and Roth IRA to Roth IRA rollovers. Instead of using the 60-day IRA rollover, use transfers, direct transfers. So direct transfers can often be the way to handle these kinds of transitions, if you will. Then not limiting you to that once-per-year IRA rollover rule where people get caught. Oh, well, gosh, I forgot about that rollover that I did 9 months ago. Does that mean I can't do a rollover now? Well, you can. It's just that one of them, if you're under 59 and a half, will be penalized, and one of them will be included as personal or taxable income. So all of a sudden, you're limited in terms of numbers. A rollover can be okay as long as you only do one per year.
But the nice thing about those trustee-to-trustee transfers is you can do as many as you want, and there's no year restriction there. So you just avoid a myriad of things if you do the trustee-to-trustee transfer rather than relying on that 60-day rollover.
Exactly. And it applies to regular IRAs or traditional IRAs and Roths, Roth IRAs, too.
Okay. What's the rollover now? What do you mean when you say the rollover?
The rollover is when you receive the funds. And let's say you took it out of your IRA and you want to roll it back in within that 60 days.
Okay.
Many people lose track of that. Now, it may be helpful in some financial situations, and we've advised it. It's just that you have to make certain and keep track of the dates on that because you have 60 days to get it back in.
Okay.
Or
so
else.
If the check is made out to you, Ron Jolly, personally, then that's money going right to you. So that would be a 60-day rollover issue. Versus if they said, this is a check to a certain custodian for the benefit of Ron Jolly, then that would be a trustee-to-trustee transfer.
Now, that's a 401k situation she's talking about. So in the 401k, you roll your 401k to an IRA. You want the check made payable to the new IRA custodian, as mm-hmm. Heidi mentioned, for the benefit of yourself in this particular case. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, non-spouse rollovers are not permitted. What?
What?
Non-spouse or beneficiary IRA rollovers are not permitted. So you can't roll money from, you can't take money, rather. Let's say mom is the last one alive. She is since passed away, and as the, what we'll just make it simple, as the sole beneficiary, as the child in this particular case, you can't receive funds directly made payable to you from mom's IRA and still roll it back into a beneficiary IRA. It has to be a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer. Well, it's only $10,000. That's not really going to make a difference. Okay, fair enough. It's really not going to. It's taxable income, but there could be worse things. But we get it. All of a sudden, it gets to $50,000, $100,000. That amount of money is added to your income in that year. That's why you want to, in many cases, and some would say maybe even in most cases, get that money transferred direct to your beneficiary-only IRA. You can't include it with other IRA assets. It cannot be commingled with other IRA accounts that you have. It has to be a separate beneficiary IRA. Then you avoid the issues related to taxable income and blowing up all those other accounts as well. When you commingle those, all of it becomes taxable.
Uh-huh.
So important to know that. Next, spousal rollovers. Number three, mistakes. The first point is spousal rollover before age 59 and a half. Now, why would that be an issue? Well, let's say he passes away early. He's only 55 early at a young age. We'll say it that way. And you, as his spouse, let's say you're 55 as well, you decide to roll that to your own IRA. You are then subject to penalties for taking that money out if you need liquidity. If you decide instead to leave it in his IRA, then you won't have to pay that 10% penalty on those funds coming out.
Right.
So all of a sudden, that $10,000 that you need because he has, in this case, died unexpectedly, you're going to avoid $1,000 in penalties having left that in his IRA, which you can do as the spouse until you are 59 and a half.
Right. And at that point, if you have done that strategy, you can then, at that point, if you're the spouse, the beneficiary spouse, you can move it into an IRA entitled in your own name. So it's just that period of time until you're 59 and a half where that 10% penalty could be an issue. So it's just something to consider. And if there's more than one IRA in that situation, maybe you keep one in the deceased spouse name so you can access that for any revenue or income that you need. And then maybe you can move the other ones to one in your own name. So you do have some strategies you can use if there's multiple accounts.
In the middle of the blizzard that you are facing, we'll just call it that way. That is not a happy time. There can be opportunities for you to, I'll just say, judiciously handle those accounts to your advantage. And that's a great point, well taken. The next point was forgetting to do the spousal rollover at age 59 and a half. So in this case, she would want to get that rolled to her own IRA, rather, at age 59 and a half. In some cases, she may even decide to wait then, but we won't get into that. It's just important to understand that your options are incredible with these accounts. They really do have a lot of flexibility.
Right. And then, like you were just explaining, another thing that is on the horizon is those required minimum distributions, and that's going to depend on how the account is titled and whose life you're basing those required minimum distribution amounts on. So it just carries on, and there's a lot of strategy involved.
It does. So let's say in this case he was 75 and you're 68, and you don't, as his spouse, you don't want to take those RMDs by leaving that in his IRA account. Transfer it to your own spousal IRA. There's no tax on that, and you don't have to take an RMD until you're 72. So you can continue to defer that account. Okay.
So do most people make these decisions how, if they don't have a financial planner in their life, and a spouse dies and they're discovering, oh, you have IRAs, I'm a beneficiary, I have four, you know, how do they...
Sometimes the current IRA administrator is going to understand these sorts of things, and many times they don't.
Or maybe they listen to our show and they figure it out.
There you go. And many times the ins and outs of these, there are situations where we have gotten involved in client situations where we literally save enough tax to pay our fees for 30 years. And I'm not exaggerating.
No.
What are you thinking of doing? No. Hold on. You know, that sort of conversation.
Wow.
Are you sure you want to do that? Because here's not only the negative, but here's how you can take advantage of this. Appreciated stock within an IRA, or rather within a 401k. Maybe you want to take advantage of what's called NUA. And some of our listening audience remember that. Net unrealized appreciation. Caterpillar stock. Mm. That was my first experience with NUA. That was probably 12 years ago. A gentleman had significant gains in his Caterpillar stock, and we decided to do what's called NUA and have that stock distributed from the account because he had since retired from Caterpillar. That amount came, he only had to pay the tax on his basis or what he had put into that stock, which is a very small amount compared to the current value of the company. So the tax that he paid was only on his basis. In this case, say it was $10,000. The value of the company stock was well over $100,000 in that case. Hmm. So, yeah.
A significant savings.
Yes. If you face that in your family, even if it sounds routine, it seems like you should seek out advice before somebody says, oh, yeah, you take that IRA, pay the tax, and you're good. Invest some time or money to seek out some advice.
Instead of at age 55, you're let go from a company and just deciding to arbitrarily roll those funds to an IRA, consider keeping one or two 401ks from the same company, let's say that's the case, in that 401k so you can take withdrawals and not pay that penalty for liquidity purposes. So part of it is the ability of it to grow. The other part is, how can I avoid penalties if I need some cash? Because I wasn't expecting this, you know, the unexpected. We have a phone call.
Yes, we'll go to the phone. Andrew is on the line in Kalkaska. Good morning, Andrew.
Hello, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, welcome.
I have a quick question. I am 53 today, and I have a freestanding Roth IRA that I am maximizing at $7,000 a year. And I also have a 401k through my company that does a partial match. Is there any way I can move any of that 401k to a Roth, or am I just stuck with what I've got?
That is a great question. So you're wondering if you can move a portion of your 401k to a Roth account.
Yeah, my Roth is already maxed at $7,000 a year, and I do put that in it.
Yes.
And I don't know if I can do a rollover and pay the tax today. I don't know if that's available or possible.
This is a great question. Well, first of all, congratulations on saving $7,000 per year into your IRA. Fantastic. Into your Roth IRA. That money obviously comes out tax-free as long as it's in there for 5 years. Now, second, within your 401k, check with the administrator. Do you already have a Roth option within your 401k?
We do not.
Okay. Then you might want to ask them to include that. It's not expensive, okay. That expensive for the current administrator to include that option and to include rollovers within your 401k. So if the investment choices aren't bad, if you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. you can possibly have that option in the future of transferring portions of your before tax amounts to a Roth option within your 401k.
What?
Got it.
All right.
What if they don't want to go to a Roth option?
Then there's nothing you can do. You're out. Oh. But it's not that expensive an option as to add that to a 401k. Literally $125, $250 for a company to add that Roth option.
Okay.
And it's not just for your benefit, obviously for the other employees as well, and the long-term viability of that plan.
Right.
They're growing money tax-free.
If there is an in-service distribution option within the 401k, when usually that's around 59.5 or
so, yep.
you could at that point do an in-service distribution to an IRA and then convert the funds over a period of time or all at once, depending on your tax situation. So, yeah.
All right.
That's the next
thank
option.
You very much.
All right.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Happy birthday, Andrew.
Yes, happy birthday.
All righty. He said he was 63 today. I'm assuming it was his birthday. All right,
I think he said he was 53, actually.
53. Yeah.
26 after the hour, just up the road from Kalkaska, Williamsburg. Joe is on the line. Hello, Joe.
Good morning, Ron and Dennis and Heidi.
Good morning.
I have a simple through my business, and when I retire and dissolve the corporation, what happens to that simple? What are the rules on that? Does it roll over to an IRA, or can I keep it?
Well, you can keep it and or roll it to an IRA. Now, the key about this is any contributions made within the last 2 years, you have to be aware of those in terms of rollover amounts. That was a point we hadn't yet gotten to. But the simple IRA has a two-year requirement, cannot be converted until after 2 years. So have you been in that plan for 2 years?
Yes, several years.
Yeah, okay. So you should be okay on that. But that's something to check with the current IRA, simple IRA administrator, to make certain that there would be no penalties assessed. You can certainly keep it, number one. So you don't have to worry about that. It'll continue to grow tax-deferred. It's very similar to a regular IRA. But at some point, should you want to decide to roll it to a regular IRA, you can certainly do that without tax, okay?
Or convert
okay.
it.
Or convert it after that point to a Roth IRA, yes.
Well, does it make sense to have a Roth when you are in retirement?
It certainly can. Depends on what your if you're between the age, let's say, let me ask your age right now.
65.
Okay. Do you know when you intend to retire?
No.
Well, that's interesting because just about at any point it can make sense to convert to a Roth if you think three things. You can pay the tax with outside funds. Number two, you can leave the funds in there 8 to 10 years. Three, you anticipate your taxes will be the same or higher in the future. Okay?
Okay.
So if those three things are there, it can make a lot more sense.
All right.
Nope. All right. Take care now.
Okay. Well, today what I'm going to talk about is a little bit about Medicare. A lot of people are starting to work past that age of 65, especially since, with Social Security, we're getting into people having full retirement ages that are higher than that 65. So most people should enroll in Medicare Part A, which is the hospital insurance portion of Medicare, when they are first eligible. But certain people, depending on your situation, may choose to delay that Medicare Part B. And Medicare Part B goes towards the usual medical insurance stuff, seeing your doctor, having tests done, physical therapy, stuff like that. So Medicare Part A is premium-free to anyone who has paid FICA taxes for at least 10 years. And it's also available for a monthly premium to people who are over 65 and who have not qualified based on that 10-year FICA tax. So you can still get the Part A, but you might have to pay a premium at that point. So when you have this premium-free Part A while you're still working, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. So this is one of the reasons why people may not want to sign up for Medicare Part A, but it's a important decision because you don't want to put at risk some of your other coverages. But you can no longer put in to your health savings account once you're doing that Part A Medicare.
See, I thought you had to sign up, but 65 is the earliest you can, but you don't have to sign up for Medicare.
No, you can delay it, but there could be penalties.
Ah, sure, of course.
You could lose coverage because in some situations, Medicare is the primary insurer automatically. And in that case, if you don't have it, your insurance coverage that you may think you have may not be covering the cost.
In that case, so you could not sign up, but should you? In most every case, you should sign up for Medicare because the cost can be significant. Obviously, you need to get great insurance advice on this part, the health care cost, the most significant cost for retirees. So this is something you definitely need to sharpen the axe on, if you will.
Right, and this is why you want to go in and see somebody before you're 65.
That's what your friend Laverna at Ford Insurance advises.
Exactly. Honestly, what I was thinking about earlier today as we were discussing this part as well, you really need to make certain that you understand the ins and outs of this because a lot of people hitting age 65.
Correct. So if you're eligible for Part A, you can enroll in Part A at any time after you're first eligible for Medicare. Your Part A coverage will begin retroactively 6 months from when you sign up, as long as you're over 65 at that point. To avoid a tax penalty, you should stop contributing to your health savings account at least 6 months before you apply for Medicare. So you don't want to get yourself in a situation where you're penalized for putting in a contribution.
Mm. To your HSA, while you're still in while you're on Medicare, those two don't go together anymore, all right? You have to stop making contributions to that HSA plan.
Okay. So when you're first eligible for Medicare, you have a 7-month initial enrollment period to sign up. And that begins in the 3 months before you turn 65, the month that you are 65, and the 3 months after you're 65. If you don't sign up during that 7-month period for Medicare Part B, you'll have to pay a late enrollment penalty for the rest of your life, which I think is pretty harsh. So if you miss that, you're paying a penalty for not signing up, and you could have a gap, like we talked about earlier, in your health coverage. But there is an exception, of course.
Of course.
There's always exceptions, it seems like. People who have group health and coverage through their current employer or their spouse's current employer may be able to delay Part A and B and won't have to pay a lifetime late enrollment penalty if they enroll later. However, this exception depends on the size of your employer. If your company has fewer than 20 employees, and a lot of companies in this area are in that situation when there's less than 20 employees, you should sign up for Medicare Part A and B when you are first eligible because Medicare pays before your other coverage. Okay?
Hmm.
So what about a situation where you're retiring and your company offers to pay for some of your health insurance, and or you're in a COBRA situation. If you choose COBRA, don't wait until your COBRA ends to enroll in Part B. If you don't enroll in Part B during the 8 months after the employment ends, you may have to pay a penalty for as long as you have Part B, and you won't be able to enroll in Medicare until the general enrollment period, and that is January to March, January 1st to March 31st. And then the coverage doesn't start until July. So if you're not in that initial period, you really need to time these things so you don't have a gap in coverage.
In that case, Ron, you got the wrong die number there, and when you're playing Monopoly,
right,
you go directly to jail.
Right.
You don't even get to pass go.
This sounds like a program designed by the government. Am I right?
Could be.
Yeah.
If you leave active employment after the age of 65, even if the employer is paying your COBRA premiums, the COBRA coverage is secondary to Medicare.
Secondary.
This article points out that this means that COBRA coverage doesn't have to pay 80% of your claims, since Medicare A and B are your primary coverage after you leave employment. So that's why you don't want to forget to sign up for it, because 80% could be a significant portion.
Mm-hmm. Very. Not a good mistake at all.
Can I share one thing about Medicare I just read today?
Yep.
The Congressional Budget Office confirmed the Medicare Trustees 2020 report that the Medicare Trust Fund, the Part A account, will be insolvent by 2026. That's 5 years.
That's not too
five
far
years
off.
Away.
5 years.
And one thing I just want to I just want to point out, the reason that we focus on this, and I wanted to bring this up, is because medical costs are usually one of the single largest costs in retirement. And it makes a vast impact on people's financial plans in that retirement period, which lasts for 20 or 30 years. And it's not unusual to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement for medical costs.
Not at all. Hundreds of thousands, well into the many in most cases, for healthcare costs. So, yeah, make certain that you're ready for this sort of thing when you get started. I've been consulting with a professional there.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
And I'm the other financial advisor, Heidi Thompson.
And I'm Shay Pataja. I put the fun in financial.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson from Prout Financial Design. It's about 15 before the hour. Welcome back.
Thank you. By the way, that disclosure says it well. In most cases, you ought to have a personal consultation with a financial advisor about these sorts of things, because you're going to miss pieces and parts of it just listening to the radio.
Right.
What we're trying to do is to give you a big picture look at this sort of thing, but have these conversations, if at all possible, with a personal financial advisor. Was there a question here, Ron?
Yes, we had a question on Medicare here from a listener that says they'd like to know if there are penalties on Blue Cross Parts A and B.
Well, you want to make certain that you've signed up for Medicare Part A and B if you are 65, so that the coverages coincide with your current Blue Cross plan. That's my best answer to that. There'll be other ways and or issues that an insurance professional will bring up to you, those who are specialized Medicare professionals. That's who you want to talk to about that, okay? All right.
All right.
So in a few minutes, we're going to have the Shea stats, but before we get to that, 401k rollovers to IRAs, there was one other point here. not allocating the after-tax portion or basis to a Roth IRA tax-free. So when you're rolling over an amount from your 401k, if you've made extra contributions to that account that were not deductible in the past, those amounts come out tax-free when you retire, in essence, roll that 401k to an IRA. If that's the case, you have the option of taking it as a check, which is tax-free, or rolling it direct to a Roth where it can continue to grow tax-free within the Roth. You got two major options with that, and that could be in the tens of thousands of dollars. You may need the money. That is a part of it. But if you don't immediately, you can roll that portion to a Roth. Critical information to know. And obviously, the Roth portion of your 401k can also be rolled directly to a Roth when you're, in essence, retired. Okay.
All right.
Next. After-tax rollovers from plans to IRAs and Roth IRAs. Not being aware of the allocation rules that allow the tax-free Roth conversion of after-tax funds, which we just discussed, then failing to allocate those amounts to the correct account.
What?
Yeah, you want to make certain that you've opened a properly named Roth IRA and a traditional IRA at the firm that you're transferring to, which we're working on, it seems like, daily. Mm-hmm. Opening these accounts so that those funds can get directly deposited to the properly named account within the custodian. It's a Roth IRA or it's a regular IRA.
So, Dennis, would you say it's a good idea to just ask that specific question every time? If you're doing a rollover and you're on the phone with the administrator and you're trying to set up your rollover, you should always ask, even if you don't know if there's after-tax money in there, correct?
Absolutely. You may be surprised that there are after-tax funds in there. I've sat with clients, and they've been shocked. You know, and I got $32,000 of after-tax funds in that account. Yes, you do. Well, I had no idea. So you might be. It's not always disclosed on those statements from those retirement accounts. And that's always a fun conversation. It really is.
Always a good question to ask.
You bet.
I have a text question along these lines. I am 34, currently have just a 401k with my company. I've been saving at 10%, increased to 11% this year, which deposits about $7,500 a year. Currently, I'm at $147,000. But would like to know if I should also start an IRA, or can I take some of the 401k and convert that to a Roth?
Wow, these are great questions today. And honestly, congratulations
34.
Again. 34 years old,
yeah,
and you're this far already. That's huge in terms of what it's going to mean to you for your future financial stability. We all get it. We're trying to create an asset into the future that provides us the income that we're not getting from work. So given you're trying to do that, that's key. You want to find out, the question was, can I convert it?
Should he start an IRA, or can he take some of his 401k has now and convert that to a Roth?
It depends on about three factors. How good are the funds within his 401k in terms of are there good allocation options within his 401k? That's a big one. Two, does he have a Roth option within his 401k? There is. The contribution limits, which Heidi just pushed this piece of paper, and there it is, the Roth, thank you, Roth retirement plan contribution limits. The amounts that he can contribute are $19,500 per year to his regular 401k account or his Roth 401k. You can split it up however you like, 50-50 in those contributions.
So from another caller this hour, if this fellow here goes to his administrator of the 401k and asks, do we have the Roth option?
Do we have the Roth option?
And if they don't?
If they don't, ask them to please include it. Can you ask our people if they would be willing to include that Roth option? And that's a very viable question to ask, given where we think tax rates are going to be going and having some tax-free money out at retirement. Lots of reasons, yes.
And Dennis, we should mention as well that is depending on income limits, you can set up an IRA or a Roth IRA outside of your employer's plan if you wanted to maybe have a different investment choice or something like that.
So he was kind of asking that. He said, should I also start, and besides 401k he has now, should I also start an IRA? Or can I take some of my 401k and convert that to a Roth?
Well, so his income limits, if he's single, are 125 to 140,000 if he's single. If he's married, it's 198 to 208.
So
if he's married, if he's below those sums, he can still have a Roth IRA.
Okay.
He may decide, just for diversification purposes, to get a Roth IRA, depending on his options that he's got.
And the limit there is 6,000.
It is.
But he couldn't take any money out of the 401k it has now and put it into a Roth. He'd just have to start new with a brand new Roth.
But he'd have to start with new dollars into the Roth or convert amounts within his 401k if it has availability, or make contributions, ongoing new dollar contributions to a Roth option within his 401k. So he's got three or four different options.
Okay.
There.
Pretty cool, though. 34 years old, 147 grand.
Yes. Great.
Retire when he's 50.
Great job. Wonderful. Do we have time for Shea Stats now?
Yeah, we can do Shea Stats.
Run that, please. Thanks.
Shea Pataj is not with us here live, but was nice enough to record the latest batch of Shea Stats.
Good morning. Are you ready for some Shea Stats? Last year's 2020 contraction of the U.S. economy, down 3.5%, was the largest drop our nation has experienced since 1946, or 74 years earlier. That's from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Many American employers have recovered, and as of February 28th of 2021, they have hired back 67% of the 25.4 million jobs that were lost last year during the 2 months of March and April of 2020, and that's from the Department of Labor. Just one in 39 homeowners was at least 3 months behind in paying their monthly mortgage at the end of December of 2020. However, one in five renters was at least 3 months behind in their monthly payments at the end of December 2020, and that's from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. 13% of outstanding home mortgages nationwide at the end of December of 2020 were refinanced during 2020. You know, quick before the rates rise is what they say. That's from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The Congressional Budget Office released a 10-year forecast on January 19th of 2016, so 5 years ago, of the projected size of our national debt. The nonpartisan agency predicted that our annual national debt of $18.9 trillion in size as of January 19th of 2016 would reach $28 trillion on December 31st of 2025. As of last Monday, March 1st of 2021, the national debt is $28 trillion. 39% of the U.S. government debt that is held by the public was foreign-owned in 2019, the most recent year that the data is available. That's down from 48% in 2008, and the source there is USA Facts. 35% of the 153.8 million tax returns that were filed nationwide for tax year 2018, the latest year for which data has been released, did not pay any federal income tax, a total of 53.4 million tax returns. 90% of these non-taxable returns, so that's 48 million returns, reported adjusted gross income of less than $40,000, and that's from the IRS. Well, there's my Shea Stats for today. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Shea Pataj, Prout Financial Design, back live in the studio with Dennis and Heidi.
So, great, thanks, Ron. Boy, that national debt number was really stunning 5 years early.
The CBO does these 10-year forecasts, and I always say it doesn't really do any good because you never know what will happen. So they thought we wouldn't hit $28 trillion until 2025. We're already there.
Well, they thought that we would hit, I think
they underestimated us.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 28, they thought it would hit by 2025, yeah. So it's exactly where it is, almost 5 years early. Yeah.
Jeez.
Significant number. Now, that increase, by the way, let's see. I'm just double-checking there. Yeah, that would have been about 10 years. So that was about a 4% increase per year.
Hmm.
The actual increase.
Tennis has the magic calculator out.
Yeah. By the way, last week we'd had that question of $1,000 growing over a 42-year period, and I'd done a very rough. So I actually got my calculator out. The actual amount at 10% per year, which is a pretty good rate of return, obviously, a doubling approximately every 7 years, was closer to 55,000, not the 62 or 64 that I said it would be.
He overestimated.
Yes, yeah. I did indeed. It shows you the difference there in minor interest rates, because it's actually set. No, we're not going to go into that detail. Okay. Anyway, the exact number closer to 55.
We have a guy that says he has a quick question.
Sure.
Let's go to Bill, who's in Rapid City for Dennis and Heidi. Good morning, Bill.
Hi.
Hi there.
Dennis, question
sure.
for you. Is it possible to transfer your IRA into a Roth right now and take it on your 2020 tax form?
Boy, that would be nice, eh? Sorry, you can't do that. Yeah. Now, it'll be on your 2021 taxes. So, you know, obviously pay attention to where your tax bracket is this year. And what tax you would pay.
Yeah,
you may want to take a look at getting other deductions or saving other funds, obviously to pay the tax and or to get further deductions to help pay or credit or offset the amount of tax you're going to pay this year.
That Roth conversion is a calendar year, January 1st to December 31st, and it's for that year.
Yeah. It is, indeed.
No carryover.
You bet.
All right. Sorry,
appreciate
Bill.
The question. Yeah, that's good. It's great. You know, how do we make these things work? Love it.
Text question, realistically, how many years before one retires is there no real advantage to converting to a Roth and paying the tax? Is there a...
Well...
At which point is it not advantageous?
The general answer,
yeah.
8 to 10 years.
Okay,
if
really?
You can leave the funds in there, 8 to 10 years, because of what you have paid, you paid the tax up front. But, of course, it's not just about yourself. It's about those that follow as well. Will your spouse be able to use those IRA funds for him or herself as tax-free money and or the children?
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.